I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The CHIP program provides health care coverage for 9 million children living in low-income families and several hundred thousand pregnant women at risk. The 20-year-old state-federal program, the result of bipartisan cooperation, is in peril. Federal funding for the program expired 2 months ago, and now states are running out of money. We asked David Rumid to join us. He's a general pediatrician, director of Policy Lab, and medical director of population health at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. David Rumid, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Help us understand CHIP, and this goes back to 1997. It was co-authored by Senators Orrin Hatch and the late Senator Ted Kennedy. Apparently it's been successful. It's been effective. Why is it in peril?
Yes, that's the million-dollar question right there, because if you had asked me 6 months ago whether the CHIP program would be in peril, I'd say no way. This is a strong bipartisan program, enjoys support from both sides of the aisle. And it's been tremendously successful in reducing the uninsurance rate among children in the country.
We're talking about, 9 million children and several hundred thousand pregnant women. What kind of care do they get under the CHIP program?
Well, it's interesting. CHIP was actually created because there was a real gap in terms of coverage for really working families, low and moderate income working families in the country. The Medicaid program had insured children living in poverty, many of whom whose families were making in like minimum wage jobs, et cetera. But there was this group of families whose parents were making, you know, somewhere between $20,000 a year to maybe $60,000-$70,000 a year, depending on which state you lived in, whose parents were not able to obtain affordable coverage for their children through work. And so We continued back in 1997 to have a challenge in terms of insuring all the children in this country because there was this gap, if you will. And when CHIP was introduced in 1997, there's a recognition of creating a standalone children's program for low and moderate income families so that they could have access to affordable coverage for their children. And that's grown now to include about 9 million children. And it's reduced our uninsurance rates for children to, you know, less than 5% nationally.
Wow. And these are some of your patients.
They are my patients. And, you know, and it's interesting that you asked that because a number of years ago, I started to, you know, notice something else changing, something that was a little bit different, a sea change, if you will. And I think most of us who, you know, who are employed and have families recognize that at work every year we kind of do our annual declaration for insurance coverage for our family. But about 5-10 years ago, we noticed that there started to be increasing pass-alongs in terms of expenses to families if you wanted to insure your children through your employer plan. Huh. And it's gotten to the point now with high deductibles and the doubling of premiums, et cetera, from single coverage to family coverage, that many families, particularly low and moderate income families who have jobs, who have health insurance for themselves through work, either are not being offered affordable health coverage at all for their children, let alone affordable coverage. And so I started to see this change a few years ago in my own practice where families, I was noticing that the children had different insurance from their parents.
Wow.
And it's because their parents were coming and getting access to the Children's Health Insurance Program largely within the state.
Well, we're talking about the fact that it was the end of September, the federal funding stopped. There's some arguments, obviously, going back and forth about what the federal government will do. But in some states, I'm not sure if it's happened in Pennsylvania or not, officials are sending out letters to parents saying that they should be prepared to look for alternative coverage for health care for their children. What options do parents like this who are not, you know, poor per se, but nonetheless low income or moderate income, what options do they have?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I've been asking my families who are in this situation over the last year or so what would happen if they didn't have access to CHIP. I think some families who are being offered really expensive coverage would bite the bullet, if you will, and they would figure out how to try to get their kids covered. But there's no doubt in my mind, and we've actually studied this in a paper that was released and is available on our website at policylab.chop.edu. We actually noticed that in states where there wasn't a CHIP program, we saw uninsurance rising among children.
Wow.
And that leaves the question, are we going to go back to a point where we're going to leave some of these low and moderate income families faced with the excruciating decision of whether they can even provide coverage for their children?
Because if you, I mean, this is so obvious, if you don't have insurance, especially for children, growing, developing children, what are the chances that they're going to get the medical care that they need and deserve?
That's correct. The other great thing about CHIP is that, you know, because it's a children's only program, often the children's programs within large insurance plans are sort of an afterthought, and they kind of, you know, and we have the saying in pediatrics that they treat children as like little adults. Yet their needs are so much different for what you just said. And so what the states have done in developing their CHIP programs is really remarkable. They had no requirements, but they brought together people who knew what children needed. And so CHIP plans, by and large, are very comprehensive. They include vision and dental, and they include mental health services and physical health services to support children's needs so that parents aren't shopping around for different plans in a very fragmented way.
How would you say we have listeners, obviously, in the tri-state area and beyond, but I'm interested in Pennsylvania, since obviously you work in Philadelphia. How is Pennsylvania dealing with the fact that the feds have not been funding CHIP for 2 months now?
You know, I think there's a lot of accounting sort of challenges that are being faced here and moving money over here to try to shore up the program as long as they can. I know that Pennsylvania hasn't formally announced what it's going to do, but I think there are a lot of nervous state employees out there wondering if they have to send out those same letters that you were talking about and really worried about having to do so to scare families, to give any impression that children's insurance is vulnerable in some ways might sort of lead to a lot of families believing there is no CHIP program, there is no option at the state, and rolling back what has been now 2 decades in gains in terms of messaging about that program and families feeling like they have that backstop.
I'm wondering where the outrage is. I mean, this story is rarely on the front page. If anyone reads newspapers anymore, it's deeper into the newspaper. And where's the outrage about this, and where is the urgency? And you may be the wrong person to ask on this, but this outrages me.
Yeah, it should. You know, sometimes I think I'm a pediatrician. I'm not the only one who's outraged out there. You know, in terms of timeliness, you know, we're watching what's really frustrating for me. And regardless how you feel about tax reform, you're seeing a level of urgency around tax reform this week for something that would take place when we file our taxes in April of 2019, when we haven't funded a program for 9 million children that lapsed 61 days ago. And no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
And it should have broad bipartisan support. It's an extremely popular program around the country. And so I think outrage is a good word.
That's David Rubin. We're talking about the CHIP program, and you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Tell us if you are outraged or not. There are also several hundred thousand pregnant women at risk who are also covered by CHIP. How and why are they covered, and what kind of services do they get?
You know, because I'm a pediatrician, I'm not as familiar with the extent of the services in the CHIP program for pregnant women in terms of its wraparound to the services that are received through Medicaid in general for pregnant women. But, you know, by and large, I would say the largest group that's covered by CHIP are those 9 million children.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't even want to contemplate this, but if CHIP essentially went away or the federal government, for whatever reason, decided not to fund CHIP, what would happen?
I think, like I said earlier, I think you would see some families really try to stretch their budget. I think often you'll see, you know, we've seen evidence that parents will forgo their own health care to try to get their kids covered and access to the services that they need. So there are intergenerational impacts on how people kind of divide up the monthly balance. But if you look to the study that we released in Health Affairs in December, there was the bellwether warning. We saw a significant increase in uninsured children, the first time in 2 decades within states that didn't have CHIP as an alternative, as parents could no longer afford their employer coverage. And so, I'd encourage folks to look at that study, because to me, That is the sort of dire warning that you take CHIP away, you're going to see dramatic increases in uninsured children in this country among working families.
And is this in any way connected to the dismantling of the Affordable Care Act or just sort of what is happening to our healthcare system overall? Is CHIP implicated in that?
It shouldn't be. I mean, in many ways, the Affordable Care Act, you know, has a very small footprint compared to CHIP in terms of children. Many states have sort of directed, you know, families who are coming to the exchanges to, if they were eligible, to actually get their children's insurance through CHIP. The ACA is principally about adult coverage and single adult coverage. I mean, that's and the early experience with the ACA is that the plans that have been offered there are not as comprehensive or as affordable as the CHIP plans themselves.
Let me get, looks like Rebecca from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
So I'm outraged as well. I've called my senators, and I'm curious, first of all, what else you think I can do? And also, I just wanted to comment that I originally got my kids onto CHIP in 2008 or 9, rather, when my daughter had a concussion and no insurance company would insure her. So it was a matter of a pre-existing condition, which is certainly not uncommon with children. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned not only about losing CHIP, you know, as a small business owner that's trying to, you know, survive and does not have employer insurance. My husband and I have insurance to the exchange. But I'm also wondering with all these ACA rollbacks, potential rollbacks, are we going to lose CHIP and then face the situation where we, you know, with pre-existing conditions, cannot even get our children enrolled? So it's scary not just to lose CHIP, but to then to not know what options for those of us without employer coverage will have.
Yeah. David, can you respond to that in any way?
Yeah. First, I would reassure you that to me, the ACA and CHIP are completely different. And I think there's, you know, I think the first is to educate everyone that CHIP has been around since 1997. It's for children. The ACA was largely meant to address a lot of adult coverage gaps, particularly folks who were self-employed, who are lower moderate income and didn't have access to coverage for themselves through their employer, right? But they did have, they should have had access, like you just mentioned, for their children to these children's health insurance programs, and that's why they're so popular. And as to what you know, so delinking the two is the most important thing. I think most people in Washington on both sides of the aisle understand that.
Yeah.
But the second thing as to what you can do, I mean, I've thought a lot about this. You know, it feels like the noise is so loud today to how do we advocate when there's such an outrageous issue. What we've talked about here is having people like you tell your story, because I think that when people look at public insurance for children, assumptions are sometimes made about who the recipients of those programs are. But when you look at it across the board, the overwhelming majority of people who access these programs for their children are working families, and particularly for CHIP. And we need to tell those stories to educate the public of why this program is so important.
Rebecca, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. As you were talking, David, I was thinking, what if children marched, I'm not suggesting this, but marched on Washington? I mean, who lobbies for children, besides parents? You know, who lobbies for children?
It's really hard. It's really hard. And so, you know, when you look at it, the healthcare lens, sometimes it's hard to magnify the children's issues, because when you look at the amount of money that's spent on healthcare in the country, it's overwhelmingly among adults. So when people are looking at healthcare reform, they tend to focus on adults. When in fact, when you look, you know, some of the statistics surprise you. More than half the children in this country are covered by public insurance nowadays. And so the sheer magnitude of the children should warrant that level of engagement. As to how we kind of educate people or magnify that signal, that's been a real challenge. I mean, maybe it's a children's march, like you said, to really dramatically state that point. But, you know, far be for me to know exactly, like, the best way to advocate. But I think we need, like, we need to somehow sound the alarms in a way that we get people's attention.
But even if funding is restored, and let's hope that it is, it seems to me in a healthcare system, especially dealing with children, you need stability. You need consistency. I'm assuming doctors and hospitals, they need to have some predictability about how they're going to pay for the services they provide.
Yeah, but I don't want to make, you know, you're right. I mean, I think there's real challenges. But to me, the real loss here is the child who doesn't show up to get their immunizations, or the child who has a behavioral health issue who isn't addressed because the parents can't afford to come and have that child seen. And as a tester, I'll tell you a story about a patient of mine, because I told you I've been asking families. And this may seem like a small issue. I had a family I hadn't seen in a couple years in my practice. Terrific family. I knew both parents were employed, and they were in this sort of segment they didn't know about CHIP or Medicaid, and went without insurance for their kids for a year or two. And their son was an athlete in high school, and he did not participate in sports for a year or two because the school required the family to get a sort of evidence of a sports physical, or an evidence of a physical and a comprehensive screening from the pediatrician. And they were embarrassed to admit that they couldn't afford that visit. They didn't come to see me. He didn't play sports that year. And then you sort of, you know, to me, it's not a life or death situation, but you think about that child's emotional self-esteem, his opportunity, his limited opportunity to kind of set himself forth in high school. There are downstream effects to the lack of health insurance to children in terms of their wellness. That to me, it's, you know, I want to steer it away from, yeah, we have challenges at the hospital in terms of uncompensated care. But it's about the fact that we've lost an opportunity to intervene to help our families.
David Rubin, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. He's a general pediatrician, director of policy lab, and medical director of population health at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, talking about the CHIP program. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.